You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Just a young gun with the quick fuse. I was uptight, wanna let loose. I was dreaming of bigger things and wanna leave my old life behind. Not a yes sir, not a follower. Fit the box, fit the mold, have a seat in the foyer. Take a number. I was lightning before the thunder.
Thunder.
.809 All Marine Radio continues. Joining me out from SoftRep, senior editor. Is that what it is now? Is it senior editor?
Senior staff writer. Senior staff writer. I can write, but I can't read.
It was recently promoted. We love that. Alex Hollings. Alex, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, man. Thanks for having me back.
Are you kidding me? You were born for the podcast, man. You're like plug and play. You're like the Energizer Bunny, man. This segment could go on for 6 hours. That's how much content Alex has inside of him.
God help my poor wife, because that's actually what she gets. She gets me just going on for like 6 hours a day.
And your poor daughter. Dad, please, can you pull the car over? I need a break. I just need to get away from you for a minute. But you know what?
She's only 5 months old, and she's already, like, learning that you just need to be louder and keep talking all the time to be like Dad. So, I'm really not teaching her good things.
But you know what? They love it. Kids love that stuff. One of my Marines says, hey, Max, just so you know, I love when you play Reveille in the morning. And I said, why is that? Because he said, I have a Bluetooth speaker, and I walk in my kid's room, and when you fire that thing up, I said, you know, most people say, oh, you know, that's great. But you know what? Kids love that stuff. They'll scream and yell, but they love having that kind of crazy dad. Like, well, let me tell you.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Come on, man. Everybody loves a little bit of craziness in their life. Speaking of craziness, give us an update. So I'm, for whatever reason, I'm not over the whole arson incident, okay? So, you know,
Lord knows I'm not either.
I know the case is cold, but, you know, the FBI just solved a case that was like 73 years old yesterday in Northern California. So hope springs eternal. Any new development on the arson investigation front?
No, only like my crazy paranoia. As we talked about before, I've got security cameras and motion sensors set up all over the place. And I've identified a clear gap in my apparatus over the past week that I'm working to resolve, where somebody, I mean, it's not even a big deal at all, somebody just stacked a pile of rocks in the woods near my house. That's not a big deal. Who cares?
Yes, it
but
is.
But I'm crazy now.
No.
It's
a big deal. What did the stack look like, and was there any Muslim writing near the stack?
There was no Muslim writing.
Let me tell you, if there was, something's going to explode in your home shortly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so it's just a stack of rocks around the base of a tree in the woods. You know, I live out in the middle of the woods. So it's strange for anybody to be around, you know?
Yeah.
So now I've rearranged all my cameras to make sure that I've got not just a view of kind of my perimeter in my lawn, but now I'm making sure I have a view of the woods beyond it. You know, so it's good. It's keeping me from getting, you know, complacent. Every once in a while I panic about a new thing and I adjust everything to make sure that I can see things better than maybe I could before. So the one thing that this has done for me is it's arguably made me paranoid, but I would argue that it's just combated complacency. You know, I'm very security conscious now.
Is there such a term as paranoid-er? I'm more paranoid than I was before.
If there isn't, there should be, and you can put a picture of me.
Thank you very
right
much.
Right next to this definition.
Have you moved the Claymore mine yet? Because that'll be a signal that you're really taking this seriously if you move the Claymore.
I'm not going to tell you anything about any explosives that might be on my property. No, I'm just kidding.
That may or may not be on my property. Come on.
Exactly. I don't need anybody to know about the perimeter defenses. Just rest assured that they're present, you know, in case you're thinking about coming by.
Yeah, if that arsonist ever coming back again, you're going to be missing body parts. Okay, so nothing new?
I can tell you, he couldn't have known it was me, because Lord knows I'm the last guy in the middle of the woods with a house full of guns that you really want to come and mess with. I have to assume it wasn't a personal attack. I don't know, man.
Why would you assume that?
Well, you know, I don't interact with people all that much, man. I'm working constantly. When I go to the grocery store.
Maybe that's the issue. Maybe you're not like... Because here's the deal. Whether you know this or not, you're not from around there. It is the South.
That's very true.
Right?
That is very true.
And you Yankees are going to learn that it's only a question of time till we transfer the industrial base to the South, that the South will rise again. Okay? So, I don't know if you've heard that, but it's coming to a theater near
you. Know,
year.
I hear the South will rise again in a pretty regular interval down here. But for the most part, I got to say, I think that a lot of people in the South get a bit of a bad reputation from the Confederate flag wearing, flying.
You're right about that.
You know, there's like, most of the people that I've run into, even the dudes running Confederate flags, you know, full-size flags off the back of their pickup truck, are usually pretty willing to have a reasonable conversation with you, you know, especially in person. But it's not to say that I haven't run into people who didn't like me because I talk too fast and I'm clearly from the Boston area. I'm a little too Irish for some of the people around here. There's definitely still an element of it, you know, but I think that it might be a little overblown, you know, in our popular culture. We like to think that, you know, a guy with a Confederate flag wants the South to rise again. It's really more about him wanting to get a rise out of you because he put a Confederate flag up, in my opinion.
Well, I think there's a little bit of family and...
absolutely. It's just tradition behind it.
Yeah,
you know?
There's a little bit of defiance in there. There's a little bit of they like that whole concept of the South not kowtowing to the North.
Absolutely.
They like all that. And if you peel
even
less back,
from the North nowadays, it's also the West nowadays too. They really don't like the idea of coastal elites kind of telling them how to live their lives. You know, and I think that speaks to what happened in this last presidential election too, where these people are kind of marginalized because they don't have an advanced degree from a school that you can see the ocean from, and they don't work in a studio in New York City or LA. So the concerns that they have
are
misrepresented.
There's one more bullet, and they've been told for years that we haven't forgotten about you.
Yeah, yes.
By the people
but
that
meanwhile,
inhabit,
we've
by,
done nothing for
right,
you.
Right, by the people that inhabit the nation's capital. We haven't forgotten about you. It's important to us. And I agree with you.
It's really difficult for, you know, it's like during this last election, race came into play a lot. You know, and it's difficult for some of these people who, in some instances, you know, they don't interact with minorities at all just because there are a lot of predominantly white communities down here who are really poor, you know? So when they see everybody on TV talking about helping other ethnic groups, for instance, they take that as a slight against them. But the whole thing gets perceived as a race issue when it's really not. It's a geography one. You know, it's about where your constituents are and supporting your constituents. So when there's a Democrat in office, they support theirs. When there's a Republican in office, you'd hope they'd support theirs. You know, it gets mischaracterized as a race issue when I really do think it's got more to do with, you know, where you're located and how that area historically votes, you know. But, it's a complicated thing, but really what it all comes down to is nobody wants to be poor.
I think the race issue is overblown, honestly. We elected a black human being as a president of the United States, okay? Now, if Americans will do that, I think we're over a lot of America is over the whole race issue. Now, not everybody is. And certainly that there's issues in the inner city, and there's issues with the police department that certainly got to be talked about. And let me tell you, there's culpability on both sides of that equation. police officers who overreact to certain situations need to face discipline like anybody else, okay? But community leaders have to get after violent gang stuff that goes on, in which police officers go into every night to try to stay alive. And
that's something that people forget all the time, is that these cops, now hear me out, racism I definitely think is an issue that needs to be addressed, culturally, absolutely. But I also think that we lose sight of the fact that cops are guys and girls like us, that, you know, they get scared, you know, they have training, don't get me wrong, as do most Marines when it comes to, you know, armed conflict. That doesn't mean you never get scared. It doesn't mean you're never nervous or hesitant. You're worried about making it home tonight. Things can take you by surprise, especially when you're a police officer patrolling a street, you know, in a really densely populated urban community where there are so many people everywhere all the time. I have to assume you get taken by surprise from time to time with situations. And I'm never going to fault somebody for trying to survive, you know. And I think that we lose sight of the fact that police officers aren't invulnerable. They're worried about making it home, too. Sometimes that leads to making mistakes, you know. Sometimes there's people with legitimately malicious intent. Those guys need to be dealt with. That's an ongoing process. But we both
know that there's, in a lot of those situations, there's the quick and the dead. And when you have somebody who's nervous, who's inexperienced, then you get incidents, and both of these happened.
Absolutely.
Both of these happened in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, right? You had that motorist who says, hey, man, I got a concealed carry permit. I got a weapon.
Oh, my God. And then the guy shoots him.
And the guy's, you can hear in his voice, he's losing his shit. And he shoots him 4 times, and that's the one that gets live streamed on Facebook. Okay, yada, yada, yada. Then you have the other one, where you have a much heralded Somali police officer in Minneapolis St. Paul Police Department, and he shoots an unarmed Australian woman who's walking up to the squad car to talk to them, to the two police officers who are in the vehicle in an alley behind her, because she called 911 because she saw the sexual assault was going on in the alley. She's walking up. He pulls his pistol out, shoots from inside the car across the front of his partner, hits her in the abdomen, and kills her. And so
it's mind-boggling.
So, yeah. So I think the issue of race, again, I'm 60. So I grew up, my dad was the manager of the Birmingham A's in 1967 in Birmingham, Alabama. Okay, I would go up and drink out of a white-only drinking fountain, right? I remember playing after baseball games when we'd be waiting for my dad out in the parking lot with little black kids. And I remember the trainer from my dad's team coming out and screaming, like the kind of yelling where, as a little kid, you're like, that's not normal, like, adult yelling at little kids, like, get out of the street. This is like, you know, using the N-word, telling them to get out of there, telling us not to play
this
with
is,
them.
It's abusive screaming. It's not, yeah.
And then us running over to my mom, because we knew we were in trouble, right? And my mom leaning against our car, smoking Parliament cigarettes. And we look at my mom and said, did we do something wrong? And my mom's smoking. No, go back and play with those kids right now. And we're like, what? Go play with them right now. Okay. So we go back to playing freeze tag or whatever the hell we were playing. And my mom just stared at this guy. And so, you know, that's the world I grew up in. The world that I live in today doesn't see a lot of cultural lines. Okay. Now, some people do, and they're stupid, right? But
agreed.
The vast
agreed.
Majority of American, and let me tell you, when you look at the Spanish cabinet, there's no Asian people in the Spanish cabinet, just so you know. They have a few women in it now, but it's the majority, it's Spanish men that run it. Right? When you look at the French cabinet, there's not too many blacks, Hispanics, Asians, right? The melting pot is the United States. And sometimes we're rough on ourselves, but I kind of chuckle when we go to, we have this meltdown about race, you know? And I it's an issue, but it ain't that big of an issue.
I think that you're right in a lot of ways. I would argue that I think that the reason why we've made as much progress as we have, and Lord knows I understand we still have progress to make, is because of kind of a continued social and political pressure, you know? People tend to like things to stay the way that they are, particularly people in power. They fear change because they fear that it would result in them losing some of their power, right? So the fact that we've, over the span of just one lifetime, gone from separate water fountains to where we are today, I think is a testament to the fact that social pressure really can change things for the better. The problem is that we are a frustrated society. We really are. We're a rage culture now. We love to be mad. And anger often leads to violence, or at least it leads to wanting to resort to violence. You know, like, I can't tell you how many times I see a headline and I go, are you effing kidding? Why are we even talking about this? Especially some North Korea coverage lately. We want to get mad. When we want to get mad, it's satisfying to seek violence. You know, and that's why we start to see stuff like stupid asshole white nationalists fighting with Antifa in the middle of the street. Kids live in that town. I don't care if you think it's okay to fight a Nazi. If I'm walking down, like, Main Street in my town, and I see you guys resorting to gang warfare over your beliefs, you're all wrong. You know, and I think that what we need to do as a society, you're right, we've made huge leaps forward in terms of cultural progress. What we need to do as a society is recognize the way that we did that, which was slow and steady pressure, you know? Fighting it out on the streets doesn't ever change anything, unless it's a revolution, and that's not really what people want.
But Alex, you and I both know the Antifa and the white skinhead idiots that were not there.
It's 1% of each side.
Right, were there to do one thing, and that was to fight, and they knew they were going to. And that's why when I watched the video, I saw, like, the white dudes with helmets and with these kind of shields and these some kind of wooden club. And I thought, oh, those are the white skinhead dudes. Then I saw them fighting other white dudes.
Dudes with clubs.
With clubs and helmets and shields. And I was like, did they turn on each other? Did they turn inward? No, that was the organized fight that was going to happen. The other people that were there,
people have lost sight of the fact that those two groups have more in common with one another than they do with any of the rest of us.
But if you're just watching the video, we have a big race problem. But you know what? And
exactly.
Which wasn't the truth. The truth was most of the people went down there to protest, and there was two groups protesting intellectual positions. One is, don't bleach our history. If anything, build it out. Make it more complete. Right? See this picture? See this statue of Robert E. Lee? This is who put it up. This is why they put it up. And this was the period that they were binding the nation together after the worst military event in American history. The other piece of it that you need to build out is slavery in Cook County, North Carolina. Two blocks from here, on the corner of Elm and Sycamore, Elm and Sycamore would be parallel, on the corner of Elm and 4th Street is the X building. Over 15,000 black people, men, women, and children, were sold into slavery in our county. They worked in these plantations. And you educate, and you can see what
we are.
That's
what I would like to see.
Right?
That's,
and so I think you have people advocating that, and then you have people with, no, take that shit down. I live in this town, too. I don't need to go walking through a park that has a picture of a guy who fought for a racist cause. I don't need that. And so that clash is a legitimate clash of thoughtful people in a community that is being sorted out by communities, you know, across the country. And that was the – but what got all the news coverage? Right?
The small percentage of the group that showed up with clubs.
The shields, the helmets. Right. And then what happened was the president was saying, hey, there's legitimate people on both sides. And what he gets linked to is the skinheads, which is that's not what the president was defending. And you're just like, we can't even have a discussion in this country. Let me read you an email. I see an email.
No, that's 100% true. We can't have a discussion. Yeah, I'm listening.
The interesting discussion this morning, boys. An example of what you're talking about happened yesterday in social media. Kanye West came out supporting Donald Trump. He then proceeded to get the typical liberal backlash that says you can't have that thought. Interestingly enough, his wife came to his defense saying, aren't we entitled to each to have our own opinion in this country anymore? Question mark. Interesting that people like Kanye West and Kim Kardashian might ultimately provide a counterbalance to what we see in the media every day if you don't take a popular position.
No, this is actually a really important point, because in all honesty, thought policing goes both ways. Right now, we're like a perfect example. I did an interview earlier this week with a woman named Dr. Ajit Mann, who's her PhD is in I think it was in anthropological studies, cultural studies, but she runs a think tank now called Narrative Strategies, where it's her, a bunch of former special operations veterans, some intelligence veterans, and they all work together to try to effectively manage the flow of propaganda into our country. You know, they work as like a think tank, but she calls them a think and do tank, right? Because they're capable of doing they can operationalize some of these narratives that they're putting together.
Okay.
So, you know, this interview I felt is really, really important, especially, you know, with the way that we're seeing Russia try to misrepresent not only the chemical weapon attack in Syria a few weeks ago, but the airstrikes thereafter. It's really important that we understand the way in which our perceptions are manipulated. So, you know, the article went live yesterday, and I immediately got a response from someone on Twitter saying, we can't worry about foreign propaganda in America until we can get a hold of our less biased media, because they're really what's wrong with the country. They're the real enemy. You know, and I responded, the left isn't the enemy. The left is other Americans with a different perspective. Russia, maybe not the enemy, but Russia has bad intentions by advancing these narratives. The left doesn't have bad intentions. They have strong beliefs. They think that they're doing what's best for the country. The right, the same way. They think that what they're doing is what's best for the country. They both have the ultimate intent of doing what's best for the country. They're just doing it from different perspectives and with different angles. Until we can stop seeing our next-door neighbor who voted for the other guy as the enemy, it's really, really difficult for us to address legitimate issues, you know, like these statues, for instance. Until we can have a conversation with each other across political lines, maybe don't even bring up who we voted for, and just talk about where we stand, instead of, you know, the ideas that we were given on social media from our group, then I think we can make progress. But the problem is that we still don't see real threats as threats, because we're so eager to fight one another. And that's scary to me. It really is.
I don't think the truth is important, and if the truth isn't important...
Oh, it doesn't matter at all, man.
If you don't...
The truth doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, if you don't... If you're not... And let me tell you what's really scary is when you watch James Comey, in my opinion, he's the head of the FBI. When you watch the reindeer games that he played in his position with the truth, you know, and oh, by the way, it comes out yesterday that the guy who he leaked the documents was a quote-unquote special class of non-employee at the FBI. Should that have been disclosed to somebody at some point? These are the guys that raised their right hand, took an oath, and they're supposed to be the guys who aren't biased, who play it straight down the middle. When you see what he and McCabe did, I hate the whole deep state and all. I never believed in that. But I believe in it a little bit now. I believe that you have
I think it's important for us to remember that everyone's got an agenda.
Oh, man.
You know? Even if they're not cognizant of the agenda, there are some people with great intentions. I'm not putting it in that category. But there's some people with great intentions. You know, I say this to my wife all the time about when you read stories in the media. It's not about whether or not something is true. It's about how something is presented. You know? True or false doesn't really matter as long as it makes you think it's true, right? But a lot of times, journalists, you'll see it a lot, but politicians as well, they might say things or do things with the best of intentions, not even aware of the inherent bias. You know, James Comey, I think, was clearly aware of the inherent bias. But I got to tell you, man, watching all of this stuff play out, you know, watching, you know, President Trump's doctor have to, you know, take away his nomination to run the VA and all this, it's like watching season one of The Walking Dead. I'm not rooting for any of these guys. The Democrats and the Republicans, everyone seems to be, you know, I can't believe that we're surprised it's not panning out that Donald Trump's just appointing dudes he knows to every position within his cabinet isn't panning out great. That shouldn't be a surprise. That's not how you do this. You know, I'm also not surprised that the Democrats haven't been able to put together, like, they've been after away. They've been after Donald Trump since the moment he took office and haven't been able to do so, you know, but they're still, you know, the Stormy Daniels thing, campaign finance reform laws, I understand there could be a violation of the law. It's not going to be an impeachable offense because our country's too politically charged right now for you to actually go through impeachment proceedings over a payment to a porn star. You know, they might try to do it. It won't be successful. It'll be what happened with Bill Clinton again. You know, but we're still focused on these elements that are nonsense, man. They're nonsense. Both parties are doing it. And we're not talking about serious issues. We're not talking about a proxy war in Syria. You know, we're not talking about the growing threat presented to us by China, even though President Xi, unlike Putin, has got a much more finished approach. So it almost seems like he's the good guy here. And we don't address these issues because we're more worried about whether or not Donald Trump tweeted, you know, about a porn star last week. On both sides, you know, we're more worried about things that really don't ultimately matter but are easy to choose a team on.
How does
it's a real concern.
Okay, I want to talk about technology and some of the stuff you've written about, but we can still talk about how does it change, though? What changes this in our culture? That's what I've got an answer too. What changes this in our culture? This complete disregard for the truth, this inability for our elected officials in Congress to do the most basic thing. Let me play a quote for you from the Secretary of Defense.
Let me be clear. As hard as the last 16 years have been on our military, no enemy in the field has done more to harm the readiness of the U.S. military than the combined impact of the Budget Control Act's defense spending cuts, worsened by us operating in 9 of the last 10 years under continuing resolutions, wasting copious amounts of precious taxpayer dollars.
Okay, Mattis is slick, okay? What he didn't say in there once was Congress. Okay? He's slick.
That's true.
He's...
Now, you got to be aware, you're opening a Pandora's box here, because I've written like 10 op-eds about continuing resolution spending. I have really strong opinions about what our lawmakers are doing.
But we send people, so the lay of the terrain is the truth doesn't matter, right? You can. It's news companies who, in my opinion, have disregard for the truth and their craft and their function in a democracy for reporters to report the truth, not their opinions, but their to be reporters in a technical journalistic sense. That is.
Or it's important to note not to present things in a way that benefits the bias of the agency that you work for.
Right.
I'm sure that not every CNN correspondent necessarily leans left, but the overall MO of CNN is to lean left, you know?
And so you have that, and then you have this political situation where I had a former senator from North Dakota named Byron Dorgan, and he was on, and I want to say two or three terms, and he chose not to run, I don't know, 6 years ago or so. Heidi Heitkamp is now in his seat. She is very much in the news because her seat in a conservative state is thought to be in jeopardy. Anywho, she just announced she was going to support Mike Pompeo, and they know that they can lean on her because she's swimming upstream in her state as a Democrat. But you don't have to reach across the aisle. And one of the things that Senator Jordan told me, he said, look, compromise is the lubricant of democracy. It's what you have
but
to do.
But it's also the way that you ensure you won't get reelected.
He said, look, and if I want to face a challenger as an incumbent senator in my own party's primary, all I have to do is compromise, and I'm going to get called a sellout on radio, on Democratic radio shows, on Democratic TV stations. But that's the work of the nation. This scorched earth, polarized, burn it down. Sequestration was thought to be an event that never would happen, but simply the threat of it would force compromise. And we sidestepped it and said, yeah, whatever.
So, now, I grew up in a conservative household. This is probably no surprise based on the number of guns laying around my office right now, right? but the one thing that my dad did always tell me is that the reason why our system works is because our politicians tend to lean into extremes, and that's why we have a balance of politicians. The idea was supposed to be that most Americans are reasonable. Politicians tend to lean into the extreme of the party a bit so that they can make sure they solidify their base. But ultimately, it's the combination of a politician who's trying to please his base on the right and a politician trying to please his base on the left that creates an equilibrium. You know, the way he always explained it to me was kind of a tightrope walk. Neither party is 100% right about everything. My dad was a conservative in the same way I consider myself one because I have more views that kind of align with a conservative mindset. However, I'm pretty socially liberal. I do not give a shit who gets married. It's not my business. I don't care. I want the government to leave me alone. That includes marriages and stuff like that. Leave me alone and everybody else equally. However, I consider myself a conservative because more ideas kind of right of center jive with me. But I understand that there needs to be a balance of somebody who will disagree with me on my viewpoint, because otherwise we're all wrong sometimes. We're all misinformed. We all come to the wrong conclusions at times. But when you surround yourself with only people who think the same way you do, you don't problem solve. You know, you congratulate. You tell each other how smart you are. You need a dialogue. You need a debate to look for holes. You know, as a writer, the first thing that I do when I finish an article is I submit it to a copy editor. Fortunately, Sopref's got some really good copy editors that do some content meddling along the way. So I immediately get engaged with a dialogue where someone will say, hey, man, this word choice could be construed as biased. Was that intentional? Do you want to, you know, reconsider how you're saying this? And I'll go, oh, man, you know, I didn't even realize that I was kind of injecting a bit of bias into this conversation. I'm glad that somebody had the critical thinking cap on and was looking at it and went, hey, man, you know, this kind of seems like you're trying to convince me as opposed to inform me. It happens every so often.
Okay, so cut to the chase. How does this change? That's what I've grown up.
So you've asked me this question before, and I did not have an answer.
Okay, so it's good. I'm glad you've been wearing your thinking to.
I have. But I can't take credit for this. This actually came from my interview with Dr. Mon earlier this week. Super smart lady. But I asked her that question, and I told her.
You're knocking off my question? Did you footnote it? Did you say, hey, this dude from Almarine Radio, he's really smart. He asked me this question. I didn't have an answer because I was
in. He's also my birthing coach.
Exactly. And an awesome birthing coach, by the way. What? Did you footnote it, or did you just rip my shit off?
I just ripped your shit off, but I did tell her it was from a podcast. If that
so
helps at all. It's like,
so
it's like a 20%
so
credibility.
So
I asked her. I was like, you know, I've been asked this question before, and I never had an answer. How would you answer it? And she did say, teaching people to exercise critical thinking is usually what people say will inoculate us to propaganda and to bias and the media that we consume. But the problem is that we've been trying to teach critical thinking in our school system forever, you know, and it's obviously not really doing the trick. She argues that teaching critical thinking in an effective way is the long-term solution, but that doesn't help us today, you know? that doesn't help you who already are already who you are and already where you'll be. You know, we need to think of a way that can help people.
So is that your answer? Teach critical thinking skills?
No. This is the preface to my answer.
Okay.
So critical thinking is the long term answer.
Got it.
The short term answer is to create a cultural trend where we ask ourselves not just if this is true or not, because we all do that.
Right.
You know, we all give things the fake news test, which is really just our confirmation bias test, whether or not we like this news. But we do all go, oh, well, that's bullshit. Or, oh, that seems true. We already do that. What we need to start doing is looking at the stuff that we're consuming and asking who benefits from us understanding things in this way. That's one question that you can ask any time you see a headline, read an article, watch a TV show, see a bit on, you know, cable news. All you need to ask, it doesn't even much matter if it's true or not. That's a separate conversation to have. But what you need to ask yourself is, who benefits from this specific perspective, from me seeing things their way? Every narrative has an intention. Whether it was just like we were saying before, it's not always necessarily an intentional one. But anytime someone tells you a story, there's a reason for it. They're trying to make you see something in a certain way. And if you ask yourself, who benefits? Why? Why does it benefit them for me to see it this way? It'll make you much more critical about what you're taking in. You know, if you see something on Breitbart, it very well could be accurate. The problem with websites like Breitbart is the language that they use, not about whether or not they're reporting something that's true. The bones of it may still be true. It's the language that they use to portray it. Now, that language isn't true or false, but some words are loaded with meaning. You know, as you read through it, you'll notice that the language kind of points to a conclusion that the article itself doesn't necessarily say. This is what I'm talking about that we do by accident. I do by accident sometimes, where I use specific words, you know, adjectives, adverbs, that might make you lean towards my perspective. We need to think about that. We need to think about, okay, so I read that article, and when I got done reading it, now I'm convinced that China's got this anti-ship missile that we really ought to worry about. When you get done with that, you should take a step back, just spend 30 seconds and go, okay, so who benefits from me seeing China as the opponent? Who benefits from me being worried about this new missile platform? What's the intent behind the article? Sometimes it very well might be this is a real threat and we're trying to get more people to pay attention to it. Other times it might be that we're in the middle of a trade war with China, and it benefits us to see them as a potential enemy on the horizon. Both of those can be true simultaneously. They're not independently exclusive.
Yeah, but what you're telling me is when people sharpen their critical thinking skills, and yours is a variation of hers, that this is how we're going to get out of it. And that holds no hope for me.
Well, what's the alternative, though? Because you certainly can't legislate truth into the media, because as soon as you do that, You pull the teeth out of the media.
Correct.
How
do societies change? What has to happen?
Honestly, there's two ways societies change. Yeah, violent uprising or from slow, steady, long-term pressure.
Okay.
That's what we need to be applying.
Okay, well, I would reject slow, steady pressure. I would say not a violent uprising, but there's a force that acts upon you that threatens you to the extent that you have to rethink some of the very, very core principles that you've become accustomed to, and how in the postmortem of your near-death experience, you have to look and say, the way we got here was this has to change. So I don't think anything changes because most Americans aren't affected by it. Like, yeah, they're...
I think you make a great point, but one mistake you're making...
They're pissed at Washington, D.C., but other than that, they're living their lives. They've got their lake house, right? And, you know, doesn't really affect me because I don't really serve the country. I live here. I make my money here. But I don't really give a shit. Okay, so something has to happen to threaten that.
This is what I mean, though, is that if we don't start engaging with you, because what I was going to say, and you said it anyway, I think the problem that you might have is that you're projecting your wisdom you know, you have a very logical and reasonable, pragmatic approach to these issues, and you're well-informed. That makes you not the norm, right? The person that you need to engage when it comes to, like, for instance, when it comes to counter-narratives or trying to counter propaganda that we're seeing from Syria or Russia or North Korea or China, what we need to do is find a way to engage with that middle-aged lady who's got three kids she's got to get to soccer practice. She works 60 hours a week. The news is on in the background while she cooks dinner, and she doesn't have time to vet her sources. You know, she scrolls through her Facebook feed for 20 minutes while her kid's at karate practice because she's got a minute to kill, and, you know, she'll spot a couple headlines as she goes by. If it's shared by someone that she likes or that she's like-minded with, she might retain a little bit of that. Won't remember where she saw it because of source amnesia. She'll just know that James Comey's a bad guy. Keep scrolling and go about her day. The world-scale politics, the national scale of politics, isn't a big deal for her. You know, she's worried about making it to that meeting tomorrow.
Right.
She's worried about whether or not her husband's being a dick today.
Right.
These are real-life, regular person concerns.
Right.
So what we need to do is find a way to... This is the reason why propaganda works. You engage with a person in a way that's flattering to their identity. You know, you find a way to make a person feel as though your narrative is intrinsic to who they are. That's how you indoctrinate someone into an extremist belief, you know, if you're recruiting for ISIS. But it's also how Russia gets, you know, red-blooded Republicans to share memes that argue that we framed Syria for a chemical weapons attack just because it speaks to our desire for a conspiracy theory and our distrust of the government and our detachment from what's happening in Syria. What we need to do is think about why someone wants us to think this way. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that's easy, but it's easier than, you know, 20 years of education into critical thinking.
Yeah, I don't think that we're capable of doing that. I don't think that's not...
I have to hope we are, man.
We're not. You're delusional. Let me restate that. You're more delusional than normal, okay?
Let me tell you something that I've never really articulated before, but is a real concern I've had working in the job that I do.
All right.
I don't believe in the media bias conspiracy. I really don't. I did before I worked in the media. The reason why you see these outlets, well, you know, Fox News leans so hard right, CNBC leans so hard left, as an individual writer, you feel that pressure. You know, I pride myself on trying to take a reasonable approach and trying to keep my personal politics out of my work, right? So if I'm going to write an article that's critical of Donald Trump,
right,
I know for a fact that in the comment section on SoftRef, which has a large conservative readership base, I am going to take a beating.
Okay.
I need to make sure that I have every fact checked. I need to make sure that I've got every key crossed.
Okay.
Because if I dare to be critical of the Republican figurehead, I'm going to get torn apart by people who are in his camp. I don't have that problem as much if I want to write an article that's really critical of a decision made on the left.
Okay.
Usually that's embraced, you know?
Right.
Now, so that's not to say that there aren't left-leaning software readers, but in the comment section below the articles, you get loud, outspoken people, you know?
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean that anybody's wrong here, but it does mean that as I'm writing articles, I know that if I write this article about Donald Trump making a mistake, I am in for a fight all day tomorrow on social media. I know that it's going to sour my name to some readers. And I'll be honest with you, personally, it doesn't have much of an effect on me because I'm just excited to find out anybody read anything I wrote. But it's something that does weigh on a writer as they go about their business, you know? I'm not saying that they necessarily will go, oh, man, well, I'm not going to write about Donald Trump because I don't want to fight that fight. But they'll be more careful approaching it if they're writing to a conservative base, just like you'll be more careful approaching Hillary Clinton writing for a left-leaning base. I have never once, even though SoftRef's got a large conservative...
Wait a minute, so you're trying to tell me that there's no bias in either point of view?
No. There's 100% bias. But what I'm trying to tell you is this idea that Rupert Murdoch emails you and tells you that you need to write about how good Donald Trump is...
No, he doesn't have
ridiculous.
To. He doesn't have to.
Exactly. He doesn't have to. The pressure,
social
pressure, the professional pressure is there. It's not a formal conspiracy like people like to fancy. They like to think that there's a conference table where the heads of the big media outlets get together and come up with a plan. That's not how it works. The way it works is it's all about marketability, getting traffic, getting people to tune into your channel. And the way you do that is by giving people what the people in your demographic want. Now, good...
Wait, hold on. No, and because this is, you're exactly right. Because you want a job. And if I'm going to work for them, and if I'm going to make more money, then I better dance, I better... See, and that's the whole... That's not what a reporter does. And so TV...
You're 100% right, though.
TV, you don't have reporters anymore. No,
you have opinion
you have reporters. You have our White House correspondent. Why did they use that word correspondent and not reporter? Because a reporter has a very narrow lane that a reporter operates in. They don't tell you what happened and then give you an analysis of it. That job belongs to a columnist, right? They're reporters. They report facts. And so I don't really...
And 90% of cable news is conjecture.
Right.
So you certainly can't just report facts or you'll have nothing to fill the time with.
Exactly.
Now, this is the reason why I think independent news outlets, plugging myself here, SoftRep, it's not myself, they hired me, but SoftRep is a great example of these independent news outlets that are springing up where it's almost as a response to that. Now, I'm not going to lie to you and say there are no conservative writers or liberal writers that work at SoftRep. That's not true. We certainly got people from both sides of that political spectrum.
Right.
And anytime you see opinion in a headline, you can know it's going to come from one of those two angles.
Right.
Absolutely.
But that's okay. But that's okay when it's labeled opinion.
That's where it belongs.
Right?
Exactly.
Because what's not okay is, and what we've come to be, what's come to become normal in this country is people with those biases who as a reader, you think they're a reporter.
Yes. They present themselves as though they are.
Exactly, but they're anything but that. They are not a reporter.
Where I hope these independent news outlets are going to grow in the coming years. Because working for software, we're a small company.
How can they grow when their revenue is tied to a certain line of thought?
Ah, but that's the point. Now, the point is that there's a growing demographic of people in this country who are sick of this shit. You know, now SoftRep is not nearly as big as CNN. Right. We don't need to draw as much traffic as CNN because we don't have to pay for as much as CNN has to pay for. Well, this is the reason why I love it when one of my copy editors goes, "Hey, are you sure you want to use this language? This seems a little bit loaded." And I go, "Oh man, I didn't want it to be, so let's fix that. Otherwise, we'll throw opinion in the header." Small outlets that are doing it not because of nobility. Don't get me wrong. Brandon Webb, Jack Murphy, you know, the guys that started SoftRep, I guarantee you that they had noble intentions, but ultimately, if it's not marketable, the company goes away, right?
Right.
So what we try to do is we try to covet that demographic that's sick of this shit, you know? And I'm hoping that demo grows. I'm hoping it continues to grow, and SoftRep can be a company that doesn't just employ, you know, 12 full-time writers and 30 freelancers, but it can be a company that employs 100 full-time writers and 500 freelancers. As the interest grows in finding an outlet that's not going to give you that same bullshit. That's my hope. I mean, because if that's not the case, I'm going to have to start collecting cans. As long as people are willing to come check out our work, you know, there's hope for me that we can change this culturally. Because you can't legislate journalism and hope for it to work.
Right. There's well, no I know that. Thing. That's why, to me, the only thing that in history makes a nation reexamine itself and change its course is when another nation acts upon it and imperils its existence or eliminates it.
I don't think so, man. Look at the civil rights movement. You know, it took decades, but it did work. And we didn't need to be invaded. We didn't need to go to war. There was violence in places, but there was no civil war or uprising.
You're selling me the civil rights movement right now. Really?
Well, what I'm telling you is that
there's no interest.
There's that we've no progress.
There's no interest in this kind of evolution to the truth. I mean, look at
that might be true.
There's no interest in it because I mean, can you imagine the meetings that the Russians must have? God, this is so hilarious. We plant this shit in the American media, and it takes off like a rocket, man. It gets shared.
And it does. And time and time again.
And it's nothing but bullshit. It is nothing.
We argued about 2016's election and Russian meddling. We have argued about it. We're still arguing about it.
We're not done with
it. Their campaign is nowhere near done. We talk about it in a past tense. Like, they meddled. Russia meddled. Russia meddles.
And they've
Russia
done
is
it.
Actively engaged in perception management. They have been forever. The KGB is one of the biggest reasons we had that conspiracy theory about the CIA killing JFK. Not that the KGB invented that, but they've all, you know, just like now they have RT and TASS and Sputnik, these large mainstream media outlets that they, well, they portray them as mainstream media outlets that are mouthpieces for the Kremlin. Well, all they, I call it a citation chain. The way Russia convinces you something is true is they'll report it in two or three of their small subsidiary media outlets. These websites that the Kremlin owns but has got a really cool pro-America name. There are a lot of these pages on Facebook that are like big U.S. Army War Dogs, you know, Facebook group. Specifically not that. I'm not going to throw anybody's names out there. That I've got strong opinions are tied directly to the Kremlin because they advance these pro-Kremlin ideas in a well-packaged way. So they release these stories in two or three of these subsidiary media outlets.
Okay.
Then they cite those outlets in RT or Sputnik, you know, or TASS. So now a worldwide...
Hey, tell every, oh, hold on. Tell everybody what RT is. And people
RT
should
is
know,
Russia but... Today, although people don't recognize it as Russia Today. RT is actually now registered as a foreign agent in the United States.
Had
and they're
to.
Moving towards it in the UK as well.
Had to.
Pretty soon, the UK might actually ban them from broadcasting whatsoever because of the propaganda they released related to the Skripal assassination attempt. But people don't realize that RT, Sputnik, TASS, these are not CNBCs. These are not Fox News commercial outlets. These are literally the PR arm of the Kremlin. So when they cite a story that they're like local reports indicate, and you can go to this Russian language site out of, you know, wherever the hell in Siberia to confirm their story, what they're really doing is they're saying the Kremlin wrote this over there and now it's writing this over here that's citing that over there. And then another story here in the United States, some independent outlet, you know, you'll see some Task and Purpose or some other military site see something get reported in multiple outlets. They'll assume that it's true. They'll present it and cite those outlets. I have six different websites that all report the same story is true. It's got to be true.
Right.
That's all I can do. I can't go back in time and go to Siberia to confirm. All I know is that I see local news saying it's true. I see Russian news saying it's true. And now I see worldwide news saying it's true. It's got to be true. Meanwhile, it might not be true at all. But the citation chain creates false narrative.
Right. So give me a reason to hope again. And that's why
the reason to hope is that we are, granted, we're big-brained monkeys, but we're pretty crafty ones.
Mm.
You know, we have faced big issues before, and partisanship isn't new. You know, the first newspapers in the United States picked clear party lines and, you know, and reported based on them. We've always been dirty when it comes to politics. That's nothing new. We've always fought dirty, and we've always hated the other side. We are, right now, I would argue, probably more tense about it than we've been in a long time.
But we don't care.
But this
in,
is
terms
really
of, in terms of changing, we don't care.
Ah, but you do.
I'm a minority of a minority. I'm a minority of a minority.
You're a minority with a big voice, though. You know, people listen to what you have to say. And even though it doesn't happen overnight, that's not how things ever work. You know, people don't go, you know what? That Mike McNamara guy, he's onto something. That's not how it works.
3.5 million visits to the website in the last year. 400,000 downloads.
That is awesome, man. Congratulations. That's incredible. But that's exactly what I mean, though. Look at how big a voice you present. Look at the opportunity you give me to present my perspective, you know? When you think about things like that, if you do it, and then I do it over on Sofrop to the best of my ability.
Oh,
and then
really?
Somebody over at Foxtrot Alpha does it to the best of their ability.
I don't. Come on. I agree, but I think it's such a small percentage of the country that cares about the truth. Because if more people cared about the truth, you wouldn't see the garbage that we see. I mean, and look at even CNN. CNN is behind MSNBC now.
Yep.
But do you see them taking a look at their business model and saying, you know what, you know, as much as we like ourselves, We're behind MSNBC, for God's sakes. That's Mika.
Yeah, but if you were to take a poll on America.
We're behind Mika and Joe. The Situation Room ain't all that. We're third, for God's sake.
The problem that's running into right now, though, is if you were to take a poll of all Americans and ask them whether or not they trust mainstream media news, you'd get an overwhelming no. The problem is that it would come with a caveat. If you identify as a Republican, you'll say, I don't trust CNN.
Right.
And if you identify as a Democrat, you'll say, I don't trust Fox News.
Right. Right.
Because as not just Americans, but as people, we all assume we're smarter than the average person, which by average is impossible, right?
Right.
We all think everybody else out there is an idiot, but not me. You can't fool me. We are all susceptible to perception management. That's why advertising exists. That's what marketing and PR are. They are ways to try to manage our perception of things. National-level perception management campaigns work the same way as Tide commercials. The whole idea isn't to make you consciously think about it. The idea is to subconsciously plant enough ideas that you form your own conclusions that are actually the ones that they wanted for you. Right? Now, the more people recognize that, which they're already starting to, right now they just think, oh, well, CNN's the one that's doing it.
Our conclusions are so different. You conclude that we'll get there. I don't see any appetite in the media that I watch. I don't see any appetite for what you're talking about.
Now, I think that there's an important distinction to make here, too, and that is, so I haven't had cable in the last 3 years, and I recently got it. I got it. So as the PlayStation View, it's like streaming cable you can get, you know, just like Hulu or Netflix, but it's just the channels that you would normally get in a basic cable package. And when I watch cable news now, number one, I'm flabbergasted. I had no idea it was as bad as it is.
Right.
I knew it was bad, but I didn't realize how, I mean, everything from the commercials to the presentation of the news stories themselves are packaged, catered, I don't want to say bullshit, because a lot of times it's true stuff that they're talking about, but the conjecture around it. You know, spending an hour talking about how mad Japan probably is about the desserts being served to Kim Jong-un because they include an island that's disputed between them right now is ludicrous. But I do think that the younger generation, so I'm kind of on the cusp there. Technically, I'm a very old millennial, right, because I'm in my 30s. So I'm on the cusp of it. The generation prior to me, they don't have cable. They don't watch Fox or CNN. They get their news from Twitter and Facebook and whatever websites they happen to go to. You know, I've lived for the last 3 years without cable, without a concern in the world. You know, so I definitely think that you're right, but I think that the way we consume media is changing, and that's an opportunity to change the way that we deliver it. There just has to be, but it's capitalism, man. There's got to be a market for it. It's got to be profitable, or it won't work. And right now, I think we're on the cusp of it being profitable to be objective. You know, I mean, SoftRep sustains itself, but we're not a Fortune 500 company. One day maybe we can be, as long as the demo keeps growing for someone who's like, you know what, I did vote for this guy, but just like I'm a fan of the Buffalo Bills, man, but I'm critical of every decision they've made since 1993. You know, as soon as we can hopefully adopt that mindset about our politics, stop using identity politics and start using good idea politics, things will change. If they don't, man, if you're right, we're doomed. I don't know what we do.
We have to make this change ourselves. I think we're doomed. I'm not happy to say that, but I look around and it pains me because when you see the sacrifice that you and I have seen, and you look and you say, okay, we can't even fund the budget. And then you hear Secretary Mattis's role. We can't, you know.
While we're at war.
While we're at war. And so now we had hearings last week, and Congress in its oversight is asking generals and the service branches that fly, and all of them do, what's going on with all these crashes?
And 10 mishaps this month so far.
Right, and nobody said, hey, asshole. You didn't fund our shit, and it got wore out, and we have inexperienced.
That's 100% true. No training, no maintenance.
Yeah, we have inexperienced pilots, right? We have airframes that have been used to death, And we,
you know,
we're dropping
parts off of our helicopters, Marine Corps helicopters, parts are falling off of them over schools in Japan.
Right. That's no bullshit either.
We heard a kid in the playground a few months ago because a part fell off of a Super Stallion, landed in the playground, threw up a bunch of rocks, and hit a kid in the face.
Japanese.
We've got stuff falling off our helicopters.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. You know, and I did some looking into the Super Stallion problems because we had two go down in the past month or so from the Marine Corps specifically. And it is specifically related to maintenance funding. When the Army brings back a Super Stallion, they devote $1 million to refit and repair when it comes back from deployment. The Marine Corps can allocate $10,000 to each. That is a huge difference. There's a reason why you don't see Army CH-53s falling out of the sky, but you do see Marine Corps ones. Because we're not throwing the money at them to keep them in the air. If you never change the oil in your car, it's going to break down.
Yeah, but I think it's total bullshit to ask that question, right? Like, are you kidding me? Do you not know the answer to that?
It's the person who's responsible for it asking the person who's dealing with it.
Exactly.
That's literally
why
the Congress asks them.
Why are you doing this? Huh?
You know, it's that Mattis quote I've actually used in a ton of articles because it's 100% true. People tend to think it's sequestration or budget cuts. That's not the only problem that we face. Continual resolution spending is dangerous. What it means is, now here's one of the stats from it. When continual resolution spending is in place, which happens when a fiscal year starts before we have a budget in place to pay for it, which we've done every year for 9 years running, right? When that happens, all maintenance initiatives, particularly new maintenance initiatives, come to a screeching halt. All training initiatives, particularly new training initiatives, come to a screeching halt. When continual resolution spending hits the 90-day mark, those training rotations are lost forever because the op tempo is so high that we can't afford to fit those other 3 months' worth of training and maintenance initiatives into the remaining 8 months of the year, or 9 months of the year. It just doesn't work. So what ends up happening is every year for 9 years straight, we've lost almost a full quarter worth of training and maintenance initiatives. But it gets worse, because when we've got all these companies contracted to come in and do these training and maintenance initiatives, they charge us more money because we keep canceling and we don't know when we can pay them and we don't know when it's going to happen. If you don't pay your credit card bills on time, interest accrues. Things get more expensive when you're broke. The military's been facing this for 9 years running, so we can't afford to fund these new training initiatives, and we don't have time to do it. Even now, we had this huge new defense budget. It was signed almost a full 3 months after the fiscal year started. We've already done the damage this year. Now we're spending the money that should go towards new technology just to try to bring us back to a readiness level that we should have been to begin with, and probably could have been if we had consistent spending, even with the budget cuts, even with sequestration. If the money was consistent, we could have at least planned for it. When you don't know how much you're going to get and you don't know when you're going to get it, it's really hard to make anything better, especially when you're fighting multiple wars. The politicians have screwed our military here, man. Right and left, I'm not placing blame on one party or the other. Everybody sees defense spending as a bargaining chip. It's a leverage point. Meanwhile, there are guys that, you know, are wearing uniforms that look kind of like the ones you and I wore, out there fighting the fight right now with no money coming towards them. You know, it's despicable, in my opinion. It's awful.
And you think that somehow or other we're going to discover this enlightenment and that's going to be the panacea?
Dude, well, you know, when they were writing
you,
the Constitution,
dude, you need to move into this, you need to move into the city, breathe a little exhaust, and get your brain back in kilter, okay? All that,
I think maybe everybody else needs to move out of the city.
That fresh air has compromised your brain housing group, man.
Listen, isn't that what America's supposed to be? It's supposed to be this great experiment in democracy where we keep working at it and making it better.
We don't care anymore.
Dude, that's what it is. Because people still care about what the country does, but they don't hold themselves accountable.
Only when it impacts them. If it doesn't impact, for instance, the war. You know, whatever. Right? Whatever.
Yep.
It's an all-volunteer force. That's what they signed up for, right? Okay.
It's true, man.
Not
it's
a part.
True.
But then all of a sudden, so-and-so's, my wife's friend at work, her son got killed in Afghanistan. So my wife's got to go to the funeral, so I've got to go now. So now I
Now you have strong feelings.
And now I stand at the funeral, and this is bothering me now. The cost just to this war just kind of hit close to me. Not real close, but close enough to make me uncomfortable. That's a bit, but if you don't have that experience, doesn't impact you. Well, how does it impact my vacation to Europe this summer? Answer, it doesn't. I don't really have to give a shit. And it's in this backdrop that two American political parties fight for power, that media organizations seek to maximize profit, and there is no incentive to tell the truth or get to the truth. And I think you're Pollyanna by thinking in some way, shape, or form, by teaching more critical thinking skills in our school, that we're going to go to a better place. Okay, so we're
doomed. Now, you know, we're also doomed. Toned to idealism, though.
We're doomed.
You know,
doomed.
Who else? Our founding fathers.
Oh,
you know,
my
just
God.
Compare me to George Washington.
Oh, yeah, but they were so idealistic. What was the second thing they put in the Constitution?
Well, I'll tell you what. As soon as they were done with it, they made the Bill of Rights because they couldn't agree on the Constitution.
Okay, what was the second item in the Bill of Rights?
Oh, man, I don't know. What is it? Don't put me on the spot like that.
No, what's the Second Amendment?
Well, the right to bear arms. Hear me.
That's how idealistic they were. Like, yeah,
but
okay,
this
look,
is what
everybody,
I mean.
Everybody's got the right to free speech. We're going to all respect each other, but everybody's going to have a gun, just in case. This shit doesn't go right.
But now that is idealism, though, because what were they saying? What was the point of the Second Amendment?
That's pragmatism.
Here is that they had faith in the people, not necessarily the system. You know? Now, that's contradicted in some other parts, a bit in the Federalist Papers.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that the reason why the Senate and Congress are set up the way they are is to be intentionally slow, so that they can't immediately bend to the whim of a popular notion that sweeps the nation. It's supposed to be inefficient so that it can't be reactionary. People kind of lose sight of that. But so they definitely didn't trust the public in general. They didn't trust the plebs. They didn't trust poor people. You know, but they did assume that generations from them, there could be other well-read rich guys like themselves who might not like the way the country's being run, and they should be able to do something about it.
Wait a minute, then why allow the masses to have weapons?
Because they couldn't know, and again, idealism, but they couldn't know who it was. They couldn't say, in this new free nation, only rich white guys get guns. You know, that's contradictory to the basis of this nation, right? But what they could say is, we want our government to be legitimately and intentionally slow moving so that it can't be reactionary, but we also want the people to retain the power over the government. The government works for the people, not the other way around. It was always supposed to be the intent. That's an idealistic approach. You know, that's why it's an experiment, because it's crazy. You know, we've come a long way from that idea now, because a lot of us tend to think that we work under the umbrella of the government. If you want a lemonade stand, you need to go get a permit. It's kind of the way the world works now, which is gross to me. But at the end of the day, I still kind of adhere to those initial values, that idea that the American people, as long as our culture isn't poisonous, which it's getting a bit poisonous, as long as our culture isn't poisonous, the American people will work to make things better.
They won't.
Even if that's at the expense of the government.
They don't care. They
I think more people care than you realize, because you
don't
care.
I care.
You know, people that tune into you to hear your perspectives,
my friends don't
care.
My friends don't care. No, yeah, there's a minority of us, a minority of us that care. The majority of Americans, they don't care. What do they care about?
But how many people are in the mainstream media? That is a minority in the country. They're just a minority with the loudest voice.
Right, no doubt.
You know?
No doubt. They have a blowtorch.
So as our demographic gets a louder voice, as reasonable people, reasonableists from Parks and Rec, as reasonable people become a larger demographic, the platforms themselves will grow with them. Hopefully All Marine Radio
Listen
is
to you.
You know, a number one
you're
show in
selling,
the country.
You're selling me the little engine that could, and I'm telling you that's a fucking fairy tale. That's designed for you to read it to your daughter. The little engine that could is a fairy tale. It got crushed by the big engine that could even more.
Do you know how many Americans were opposed to the revolution? How many colonists were opposed to the revolution?
No, I've seen no polling
on that. When the American Revolution
started. I've seen no polling on that.
From the articles that I've read, from the history books that I've read, there was a reasonably large contingent of colonists that were British loyalists. They were still here after the war ended, and a lot of them ran away. The American Revolution was started by a small demographic that grew. You know, it wasn't one day the majority of the colonists woke up and realized they wanted to be America. It was that a small group of people came up with an idea, and the idea spread. That is how things work. It's not always.
Hold on.
Especially nowadays.
This is from ushistory.org. Historians have since concluded that John Adams, was referring to the French Revolution, not ours. Current thought is that about 20% of the colonists were loyalists.
That's a pretty big number, man.
No, it's not.
Now, bear in mind, 20% of the colonists were loyalists by the time the war was ongoing.
No, the current thought is that 20% of the colonists were loyalists, those who remained loyal to England and the king. And so let me just tell you how small 20% is. Okay, there's 10 of us in a room, okay? And 8 of us get on one side of the room, and I say, because I'm part of the 8, hey, let's fight. And you're part of the 2, okay? And you say, yeah, let's do this. Right, and then you get your ass
I'm going to use your own argument against you. All right?
Well, go ahead.
When we're talking about Antifa and white nationalists, you and I both agree that those guys were the smallest percentage of American voters.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Those guys don't represent the American people.
Correct.
However, they got tons of attention.
Right. Right. Right.
From a media
who doesn't care about the truth. Who knows?
Who
knows?
Who's pissed off about it?
Nobody. All the people did was get on. It validated their perspective, right? If I was somebody who went down there to protest, that look, don't bleach our history. What that validated was biased media, and a majority of Americans are totally ignorant of the true issue here. All they see is Robert E. Lee.
Your argument is that grassroots campaigns don't exist.
Well, no, they exist. They're irrelevant because bigger money crushes them.
I see, but that's where I've got a disagreement. Don't get me wrong. There are a million instances of bigger money crushing smaller initiatives.
Thank you.
There are.
Thank you.
But there's also historical precedent, not just in the United States, but worldwide, to the small group of people with the right idea.
You're going to tell me. That's what you're selling me today. The little engine that could.
I'm showing you that your option is the world's doomed, particularly America.
Yes.
Mine is there's still hope.
My honest to God thought is
we need to cling to this idea that America can recover.
It can't.
Because if we don't, it'll be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Who's going to lead it? Who's leading the recovery? The postman?
That was a movie.
It wasn't even real, man. You're waiting for Kevin Costner to have a fight to invoke the rule of 8.
If it's up to Kevin Costner, we are screwed. I'll admit that. But when you start a long-ass run,
and Tom Petty,
stop and go, there's no way I'll get there.
Tom Petty's dead, so he can't even be in the movie this time. Unbelievable.
I've got to ask you.
Okay.
When you start a long-ass run, do you tell yourself, there's no way I'm going to finish this run? Do you tell yourself, before you start something that's going to be hard, that there's no way you'll be able to do it?
If I'm committed to it, no. Of course not.
Well, we need to be committed.
That's my whole point. We're not committed. We don't give a shit.
We're not committed today. We're not committed yet.
What commits us?
Well, honestly,
getting
fed up. The feelings that you have right now, these emotions that you have right now, are what drives this kind of change.
Okay. All right. We're done with the little engine. We're done beating up the little engine that could. The little engine that could didn't. Okay. You want to know why? Because Simon and Schuster crushed it. okay? That's why the little engine that could didn't.
Telling you what, man, even Coca-Cola was a startup once.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Shut up with this little engine that could shit.
Telling you. Telling you.
We're doomed. We're doomed. And all you have to do is look around at all the sign of a for instance, here's another one. I'm for free trade. Oh, really? So a farmer in Mexico can grow blackberries, right? He doesn't have an EPA. He doesn't have OSHA. He doesn't have unemployment insurance. And then because of NAFTA, he can sell those in and against a United States producer who has all of that and who can't use the same chemicals that he can use in Mexico that, oh, by the way, are cheaper. And we call that free trade. That's bullshit. You've regulated the American producer right out of the market. So if you want to make it free, stand down the EPA, stand down OSHA, allow the playing field to be level, and allow Americans to compete. But you see these assholes, they go on TV all the time, and they say, I'm for free trade. And then you rack it and stack it, and you're like, are you shitting me with this stuff? There's nothing free about that. What you're doing is it's a race to the bottom to export jobs in this country. And now we've even automated the driver business. So truckers and cab drivers, your ass is going to be out of business too. Okay? So get ready to start your own fruit stand on a corner someplace. It's bullshit. And we keep...
Well, you can't start a fruit stand without a license.
Oh, yeah, you can. You just say, fuck
well,
it, I'm not doing it.
The police don't show up.
Please, come on. They've got bigger fish to fry. My guest is Alex Hollings, and this is nowhere near what we were supposed to be doing. Okay.
No, we didn't. We always do it, man. We didn't even get. Yeah, that's.
All right. So I want
to. That's why I like talking to you, though.
I want to briefly end. We're going to end this argument about the doom and gloom of the United States, the future of our country, because we don't have leaders in this country anymore. We have people like Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer.
We don't have leaders right now.
Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, who's now being towed up to Catapult One because he's leaving. Right? And the only thing that matters...
We've gone through phases like this before, man. We've gone through leadership gaps in this country during my lifetime. You know?
No, we'll that's your perception. Right? It's the slow.
You're telling me
it's
that when
the slow decline.
For president, you're telling me when the Democrats put up John Kerry to run for president, that was a good pick?
No. It's the steady decline, right, that got you Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump because they A, have name recognition, and B, can raise money. That is the criteria.
Ooh, but I'm hoping people are pissed off
okay,
enough
stop.
About that
just
we're done
stop.
With this game.
Just
I'm
stop.
Hoping.
Just
I'm
stop.
Hoping.
You are so close to getting banned from this program forever. You and your little engine that could bullshit. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.